Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to the week four edition to the Between the Tackles podcast. It is a very momentous occasion. Burge, we have you back on the reservation. We have you back on the airways. We're so excited to see you. It's me, Joe, Manish, and Burge tonight. How we doing, boys? We got a lot to talk about.
I almost didn't come back after my week three performance in picks, and especially after hearing some of those words that were tossed my way last week. I was like,
you didn't like the disparage Burge section? The disparage Burge section?
Disparage Burge.
You know, I get screamed at and yelled at by kids all day. Do I really want to come in my own time and get screamed at by another child, a.k.a. Joe? Do I really want to?
Me?
Oh, yeah.
What the hell did I do? Well, oh no, that was the first dude. Full disclosure, everybody, I told Burge and Manish I wasn't gonna swear today, and within the first 30 seconds I said the AG double hockey sticks, dude. Tough.
So easy to lob that grenade in, man. I know you too well.
I'm trying so hard. Manish, how are you after a good week three and indeed week four?
I'm doing great. Good to have you back, Burge. As much as I like the one-on-one time with Joe, it's always good to have one of the founding fathers back.
It's unbelievable the backhanded compliments I get on this podcast. But it's whatever. Dude, we have a lot to get into. We're going to get into it right off the back. We're going to do Pats right off the top here. I feel like there's a lot to dive into here. I don't want to shake my ass. I have a big, juicy ass. And oh my God, I swore three times. All right, I have a big, juicy butt that I'm going to shake in Burge's face. And I told you week one, dude. This shit with the penalties, this shit with the offensive line, and this stuff with the penalties, this stuff with the offensive line, it has gotten to a point where I'm running out of people to blame besides the head coach. And I really want your thoughts, because you were hard on Mike Vrabel 2 weeks ago. And I really want your thoughts after a good win and in a winnable game that they let slip through their grasp because of organizational, like, I forget the name of it. It's like when you go through the motions, it's called like it's whatever organization. Yeah, dude, whatever organizational fucking differences that they have between Vrabel and what they had before, they got to figure it out, man.
Dude, it's, you know, watching that game against Miami, it actually felt like they exercised a lot of their demons. It was not, we all know it was not perfect, but they exercised the demon. They won in Miami for the first time since Brady was here. They finally beat Tua, and it's like, okay, maybe we're turning a corner here. And then there was the week three at home. Of course, at home, where they have been absolutely atrocious over the last few years. It's been terrible. It's like, I don't know. You'd have to pay me to go to a game right now until they start showing me something, because the traffic alone down there would be enough to just make me angry. And if I'm watching a team lay an egg like they did on Sunday and having to go sit in 2.5 hours of traffic just to leave the parking lot, I might lose my fandom at that point. But, you know, the penalties and stuff, I feel like they're a young team. Like, that stuff, I it's coaching. Don't get me wrong, but I feel like that stuff will work out as the season goes on. They're a young team. It's been 3 weeks with Mike Vrabel with new coaching staff. Now, granted, you see other teams come in, other coaches go into organizations. You don't see that, right? But they're having to change a lot in New England. The culture had to completely change everything. There were a lot of positives in this game to take away, specifically with how Drake May looked, I thought. I thought that he looked really good. Again, still the turnovers and stuff are still an issue, but he's still a young player, so I ain't jumping off a bridge or a roof in Joe's terms yet with that.
I wish my roof was higher this weekend.
Well, our group chat was kind of popping off with me and you going off. And
dude, it was going back and forth. It was like, we're back, we're fucked. We're back, we're back, we're screwed. We're back, we're screwed. And it, like, you said something funny about Drake May, and it's just like, I want to give a full positive to Drake May, dude, because he was nails on third and fourth down. He was nails in the middle of the field. I think some of his accuracy issues are flushing out in the pros, where it's like, yeah, he has some accuracy issue, but when it counts on third down, third and long, and fourth and short, I think he has really good Like that ball to Pop Douglas, even though it wasn't a first down, I still feel like it was a good throw. And if that throw goes to Diggs, I feel like that's a first down. So there's a lot of ancillary things that I want to talk about. And calling Drake May a positive in this game, I think I can get behind. But
it wasn't the best positive. It wasn't the best positive of the game at all.
The thing with Drake May is I'll let you get back to it after I make this point. But the thing with Drake May is all the positives are great, but the negatives and the bad things he does sometimes are so catastrophically bad that they undo a lot of the good he does.
I could see why you would make that point, but like the fumbles are a problem. Like that interception he threw in the end zone, you can get on him about that. I look
chalked that up. That's a pick. That's a pick without the tip.
A touchdown without the tip.
No, it's not. No,
you don't think so?
No, dude. The fucking corner is breaking in on that route, and I don't know if it's not a pick, it's not a touchdown. I think
okay.
Like Vrabel and like May said in their post game and then their Monday press conference. Booty should be, and it's partially on Booty. It's not all on Drake May. He shouldn't be sitting in that pocket of the zone. He should be going towards the back pylon where Drake May can loft it over the cornerback and it'd be an easy touchdown. I get that part. But I guess my thing with Drake May is like we need to start turning these games into, oh, we should have won that and Drake played well, but we need to start turning that into, hey, we played like shit, but Drake May pulled us out of it and won the game.
Yeah, I thought we were really hoping we were going to get that on that last drive where it was like, okay, it's his time. Let's go out there and do it. And, you know, if not for a complete mental wetting of the pants of DeMario Douglas running backwards on 4th-and-1 when he's at the line instead of just falling forward and maybe having to take a hit, you get the first down there and maybe we're talking about something different. Sure, we'll talk about.
I'm sorry. I'm trying not to get effing pissed and swear up an S storm and do all this stuff, dude. But like, dude, that play made me like that is the most mad I've ever been in the last 2 years because that's a game you should have effing won. You fumbled on the goal line. You throw a pick in the end zone, and like that is you have the ball in your hands to win that game when there's no reason you should. These are the games that the Patriots need to start winning. And I know I'm getting over my britches, and I know I'm getting fucking effing pissed about the head coaching and the coaching overall. But like at some point in these last 2 years and this year, you have to beat a team that's better than you. You have to. The Steelers were.
They absolutely have to. I totally agree with you. I'm not sitting here praising Mike Vrabel. I hope you don't think I'm sitting here doing that. Like, there's definitely things that, like, we all expected were going to be cleaned up when they changed the coach. The penalties. These fumbles. We expected this stuff, the fundamentals of the game, to be cleaned up by the time the season started. Now, again, we're 3 games into a 17-game season. So, you know, they still have a really good opportunity to come out of the first month.
You're also 35 games into a fucking 3-year rebuild.
I understand that. I understand that. We could debate this all day and talk about the front office and the missed whiffing of the drafts and everything like that. But
I think we're all on the same page with that. It's just that they have to make chicken salad out of chicken bleep right now. They have to.
If you told me that this team was going to have the ability to be 500 in the first month. If the first 4 games, they're going to be 2-2. That's what they needed to do. They have a really good opportunity still in front of them to do it. That's a good point. They lose Sunday and now you're 1-3, okay, now the hole is a little bigger. And the schedule is maybe getting a little bit harder, even though it's an easy schedule. But they have a very winnable game on Sunday. They need to win at Gillette. They need to win at home. They need to start doing that.
They have to thump. In my opinion, they have to thump. They have to thump the Panthers.
That's okay. That seems a little strong to me.
21-20, 21-17 doesn't do it for me this week. You needed like a 28-3 game. You need
no pictures on the score sheet. A win is a win. If they win the game and they don't do the same stuff.
You're saying there's no pictures on the score sheet, but you're also bringing in positives from a fucking winnable game. So it's like, who cares if there's a winnable?
You're building a team. You're building a team here and you're trying to build something. You're 3 games into a new head coach era here. Like, you got that's where you're taking the pictures. Like, if they win and they got out a win, that's a positive. I don't know how you can't like say it's not like a good thing if they squeak out a win against a Panthers team that just would they last week they just walloped the Falcons. They walloped them. It was a blowout. They shut them out.
Shut them out.
Come on.
Damn,
21-17 is a good win, especially if the offense doesn't turn the ball over. Okay, Joe. Okay. Don't make me start dropping F-bombs.
I'm trying to, dude, but I think you made a good point where you're coming from at the beginning, and I totally agree, dude. I think you have to take this Patriots season in context, but I think maybe the context, and I think this is partially my fault because I love Mike Vrabel as a player, and I love Mike Vrabel as a coach in Tennessee, that I think that maybe that some of the expectations maybe be unrealistic because of who the person they brought in as coaches, right? I think bringing in a former player that won multiple Super Bowls and was an integral leader in those Super Bowls, I think got the fans in a frenzy to a point where I don't think there's a lot of middle ground or there's a lot of like a take that you can give this fan base to before you see results on the field. And I kind of want to take that real quick, Burge, before you get to your next point. I want to take that into the locker room after their first win. We all saw the video. Vrabel's talking to the team. Kraft cups him off, silences the whole room, and sticks a game ball in his stomach. Manish, you could probably speak to this. Burge, I know you can as well. It's not abnormal to see a coach in a locker, a owner in a locker room after a big win, right? But
no, that's common.
The body language that I saw from Vrabel after that, the body language and some of the things coming from the podium in the first and third week, talking about the offense, how it has to score. I don't know if Vrabel is a big stat guy. Obviously, he is. He talks about win percentage all the fucking time, all the effing time. And dude, the offense is 16th in offensive DVOA, and the defense is 28th. Even after that fucking great performance, I will objectively really good performance, kept them in that fucking game, in that effing game with the Steelers. They kept them in that game. But there is my overarching, I guess what I'm trying to get, something fucking stinks. I'm done with the swearing thing. 17 minutes and 21 seconds. I'm done, dude. I'm done. I tried. I gave my best effort. Mom, I know you're fucking listening. I'm sorry. You raised a sailor. You raised a dude with a sailor mouth. That's on you. I don't care. Dude, there are things in this. Things stink. Things still stink in New England. And that's the thing I'm worried about. Manish, I don't know. You've been a guy in the press. You've been a guy that's seen people put something out that they really don't mean to get a position in the press. How do you feel when Vrabel comes to the podium as the Patriots head coach and says the things that he does the last 3 weeks?
Well, he's three games into his tenure. And I understand, you know, fans are upset and reactionary after this most recent loss. You guys touch on a number of great points as to why they lost. I just would caution the whole conversation about, well, he came in here to reset the culture, and I don't really see a difference. You're three games in to, hopefully for the Patriots and their fans, many year tenure with a coach that you believe in, a coach that frankly everybody wanted a year ago. So I would just kind of pump the brakes a little bit after this game, because they were extremely sloppy. Look, you're not supposed to win any games in which you have five turnovers. But on the flip side, you're probably supposed to win 90 to 95% of the games in which you hold the opponent to 203 yards of offense. Really no running game to speak of in Pittsburgh last week, for Pittsburgh last week. Aaron Rodgers, under 150 yards passing. The Steelers committed actually more penalties than the Patriots did. They had eight. So, and by the way, the Patriots dominated the time of possession. Those are all good things within the course of a game. You talk about specific stats. Those are all elements of a game that you should be encouraged by. And the fact that they still have an opportunity to tie that game, to perhaps win that game in the waning moments, despite having five turnovers, is a positive. And look, at the end of the day, it's a loss. You know, there's no moral victories. We hear that, blah, blah, blah. But I don't think there's anything particularly off-putting or weird about the way that Mike Vrabel has handled himself in the post-game press conferences, only because, again, we're less than a month into his tenure. If he's saying similar things and they're losing in similar ways in December, then we can revisit this conversation. But at this point, the defense played exceptional, I thought. They dominated the time of possession, which means that they did something right on offense. It's just you can't fumble the ball at the goal line. You know, there's the elephant in the room. We haven't even talked about Ramondre Stevenson coughing up the ball a couple times, which has been a problem, obviously, in his career. Those are things I think that are fixable, whether that's fixable for Ramondre Stevenson or the coaching staff deciding that he's going to play less and the other running backs are going to have more of an opportunity remains to be seen. But I don't think it was a train wreck. Five turnovers is a train wreck, yes. But there are so many other components of last Sunday that I thought were encouraging for me.
Like for me, seeing them be in the game when they were, like they, for all intents and purposes, you take those turnovers out of this game, they dominated this game. They controlled it.
Dude, outside, I'm sorry. I'm so done with the five turnovers. No, but I'm so done with the caveats. Who cares? Who fucking cares? Win the fucking game. Sorry. Keep going, Burge. You're a couple years older than I am, and I think that it makes the world of effing difference as a Pats fan. It does. I can't do losing. I can't fucking do it. I can't do it, dude. I can't do it. I can't. The watching the Mac Jones throw fucking limp penis interceptions, fucking, it killed me. Watching, I have so much PTSD. The team just needs to be better. I don't care. I don't care if Drake May's the guy. I don't care if Vrabel's the guy. I don't care if we're keeping this guy or cutting that guy. Shooting Ramondre Stevenson into the sun. I don't care. Win the effing game.
You should care, because if it's not, you're going to end up stroking out by the time next year rolls around. They're the guys.
I should have stroked out 2 years ago.
Listen, you probably are. I don't remember what our age difference is, but you probably don't remember watching them play with Bill Parcells.
The first game I ever watched was the Snow Bowl in 2001.
Okay, there you go. There you go.
I was six.
Jeez Louise, man. I am getting old.
But, like, dude, that's, like, I think that, like, I always have to anchor my arguments and anchor my brain in the fact that, like, I am never going to see what I saw again, ever.
None of us are.
And, but, like, dude,
But Joe, let me just interrupt real quick. So Joe, just let me ask you a quick question. Are you encouraged by what you've seen from Drake May?
I think that is the only encouraging thing in New England right now.
Okay, so and the quarterback is the most important position in team sports in North America. So if you're encouraged by the player who plays that position, that's a good thing, and that does matter. And are you still happy? I can't believe I'm asking this, but are you still happy with the Mike Vrabel hire 3 games into his tenure?
Dude, the thing is like, dude, all right, let's get into the week 4 preview. And I think the Patriots is a great way to do this. Okay. Christian Gonzalez is going to play this weekend. And if there's any player more important to Mike Vrabel's success than Drake May, it's Christian Gonzalez. You guys, we all know on this podcast, everybody knows who've ever fucking covered football or watched football for 5 minutes. Number one corner is like the second, third most like important position on the team. So I think that, and I said it in the group message earlier, I think that Christian Gonzalez coming back and playing a full slate of games and pulling a full slate of snaps will be better for Mike Vrabel's candidacy to keep his fucking job. Obviously, dude, I get crazy. I was calling for his job week 1 because I'm a maniac, dude. Obviously, we fucking know that. Sorry, Mom, for swearing again. That one's for you. But, like, I don't know how, like, I understand that, and I understand Gonzo's coming back, but, like, I'm trying to go forward, but like to stick your head in the sand and say that absolutely nothing is going on is wild. Because winning masks everything, right? Winning, if you guys are winning, Josh Vrabel isn't calling out the offensive play calling and getting in week one. He's not calling out the offensive play calling and saying you need to score points in week three. Nobody's saying that because he didn't say that week two when they won, right? He didn't say that week. So you guys are right, obviously. Every time we argue, you guys are right. And Manisha's right. I have to have more patience and let the teachings take hold. But in my opinion, you are out of your tree if you don't think that something a little bit, a tiny little bit, smells a little bit funny with this forced marriage between McDaniels and Vrabel. Like it, something smells a little bit funny, and I know that if they keep winning, it won't matter. You guys are right, 100% right. If they win and they do good and they have a 8-9 wins, they come close to 500 or they get over 500 and challenge for a playoff spot. I totally agree. That'll mask all the crap I'm talking about will get masked by that winning. But I think it's a little disingenuous to not see the tea leaves and reading between them right now.
Look, this is what I'll say about that. And I've been around my fair share of head coaches who did not like their offensive coordinators without getting into details.
Wait, hold on. Manish, what did you tell me that Vrabel did to his first OC and his first GC in fucking Tennessee?
His first OC? Well, I know that Todd Downing was his longtime OC. I don't know. Was he his first OC?
We were talking about the GM. The GM who he fucking canned. Sorry.
Yeah, the GM. That's a whole different dynamic. But when it comes to even offense coordinators that the head coach hires himself, I've seen friction a number of times over the last two decades. And you're right. I'm not saying that the marriage is perfect between Josh McDaniels and Mike Vrabel. I don't know. But what I will say is that it really is too early to make any kind of definitive statement. Is Mike Vrabel upset at certain things that Josh McDaniels has done? I have no doubt that he is. Every head coach, especially a defensive-minded head coach, second guesses their offensive coordinator if things aren't going right. Believe me when I tell you this. I know this from talking to many head coaches who I've covered who felt that way at different points. But what I will also say is that if you got those head coaches 3 weeks into the marriage, even they would admit that let's give it a little more time. Yeah, I'm frustrated at the moment. I might take a subtle shot or not so subtle shot at the offensive coordinator publicly in a number of different ways. But ultimately, you need a larger sample size. And that's all I'm saying. I don't think that there's a segment of Patriot fan base that is burying their head in the sand. I certainly don't think that Burge and I are burying our heads in the sand. But what I would caution is that if you are trying to rebuild, and that's really what the Patriots are, I know that you don't have the patience for that. Joe, I'm sure a lot of Patriot fans feel the same way. But the reality is that you can't discount what's happened over the last few years in terms of roster development and whiffing on drafts. That's not something you talk about week to week, but the reality is that does ultimately manifest itself as this season goes on. If you don't have a quality roster or if it's not up to where you think it needs to be. So those are all things that Vrabel and McDaniels are trying to overcome and mask in a variety of ways. I would just say I'm not disagreeing with the notion that there's friction between the two, but as someone who's seen defensive-minded coaches have their issues with offensive coordinators, I can tell you that even the frustrated head coaches in these circumstances would say, "Yeah, I'm pissed off at the guy, but let's see if we can kind of correct this as the season goes on."
Eric,
yes, I agree. I agree with Manish 100%. I'm siding with him. I ain't going with you jumping off any bridges. At the end of the day,
hey, there's water at the bottom. Just because I just get a big splash doesn't mean you have to fucking write me off.
I'm not even going to go there. At the end of the season, if this team is 8-9, regardless of how it's looked early in September in week three, how can you not be happy with that?
What's a fail for you win-wise? What's a fail?
Repeating what last year was.
So you need five fucking wins. Sorry for swear. I need to work on the swearing.
If
I
it's think five, if it's five wins and they're five in every 13, game, if they're five and 13, 12. Drake May still takes that step, a step in the right direction. Like meaning he doesn't regress.
I don't think Drake May. If based on the roster construction, I don't think if Drake May takes a step, I don't think there's any way that you don't win more than six or seven games.
That's probably true. The record doesn't as much matter to me. It doesn't matter to me this year.
I'm done with those seasons, though. I think that's what I'm saying. We've had 2 4-13 seasons. You picked in the top five twice in a row. You pick a fucking guard fourth overall as a fucking left tackle, and you think your team is fine?
Joe, it is year one. I know you don't want to do it. You got to forget.
Why weren't the Commanders in the same fucking? Why weren't the Commanders in this?
They had more talent on the roster.
That's asinine. That's asinine. Besides Terry McLaurin, who's better than the Patriots' fucking offensive talent?
I got to look at the roster.
Brian Robinson is basically Brian Robinson is basically the same thing as Ramondre Stevenson. Zach Ertz is basically the same thing as Hunter Henry. The offensive lines are comparable. The only difference is the effing quarterback. So it's like, do we have the guy or not? I believe in Drake May. I really do. But like I'm just sick and effing tired of this waiting game.
Who's 25 when he came out of school? Drake May is 23, just turned 23 or 22 years old. I can't remember what it is, but he just turned it. The kid is young and raw. We knew that when they drafted him. We knew it was going to take time for him to develop. We knew he was a raw talent. He wasn't going to just plug and play, come in, and he was going to go. He wasn't that prospect. So, like, you got to give it time. I'm not making any judgments on this. All I can say is the record is not going to be what determines whether this year is a success or not for me.
I could not disagree more. I could not disagree. The reason you bring in Mike Vrabel is to be the exact opposite of Gerard.
If this was year two, I'd be more in your camp than I am.
But
now.
What's the point of changing? What's the point of changing nothing besides the offense besides the head coach?
To build. They didn't spend their money. They didn't spend all the money they had this year in free agency. So, like, next offseason is going to be a big offseason for them. They're going to have a ton of cap room.
Nelson Aguilar is going to be nasty with
Well, I don't even want that. But we're not revisiting the past here. Stop doing that. You're just going to stroke out, man. You're just going
to
stroke
fucking
out.
Fucking too late, dude. I tried not to swear. I think we're up to effing 15 in the first 30.
They have a very winnable game this week.
I don't want to say I disagree or don't understand where you're coming from, because I totally do. And I think that, like, what we got back to with the fact that, like, you started watching the Pats a couple years before I did, I think it honestly makes a difference. And my opinion and my worldview when they brought Vrabel in, it's just like, let's bring this fucking football guy in, turn the keys over to him, and get out of the way. And
don't think he's Bill Belichick and Drake May's Tom Brady.
I don't think Vrabel is Belichick by any fucking means, because he's way better
at
drafting.
That's what that expectation is.
Way better at drafting. Wink, wink, way better at drafting.
You ain't triggering me with that. You ain't triggering me with that.
But I guess we can get off it and we can get into the Panthers next week.
Yes, let's move on.
I'm going to be totally honest, dude. I think this might be a shootout and the Patriots might win by 20 fucking points.
I'm not going to go that far. I mean, the Panthers have, you know, week one lose, and then, you know, they come out and they shut out the Falcons last week. So they're a little bit of a wild card. I think Bryce Young's still a little bit of a wild card. He has stepped up and kind of played
Six
a lot better
older than Drake May.
Exactly. He's what, in year three now? He's in year three now. So, like, he's got some experience now in the league. So he, as we saw when he got benched, what was it last year or the year before? I can't remember. It was last year or the year before that he got benched, but he got benched and then came back in and he was like a different guy. So, like, he is better than what he was, obviously, at that time, because it takes time, Joe, time. That said, I'm not going to say that this is going to be a blowout by any means. I think that's a bit of a stretch. I expect that the Patriots are going to blow out a team. I mean, come on. That's why
the Patriots will win, because even though the Panthers shut out the Falcons last week, I think it speaks more to
Atlanta.
How perhaps, I think it's Atlanta. I think it speaks more to how perhaps Michael Penix Jr. isn't as good as some people thought than it is the Panthers are actually good. So they didn't really look good in those first two games. Jacksonville kind of toyed with them in week one, maybe throw it out because it's week one. They lost to Arizona. I'm not particularly impressed with Arizona. So I would be surprised if the Panthers went on the road and won this game. I don't know about a blowout, but I would anticipate that the Patriots would control this game, whatever that looks like in terms of final score. Who knows? But, I think, Burge, I think maybe you said it earlier, they cannot lose this game. This is a game that they cannot lose. Yeah, it's a game that they will not lose. They will win this game.
Yeah, they have to win this game, and they don't have to blow the Panthers out for it to be a good win. I'll settle for a close win, ball security, and minimizing the penalties. That's if that happens, I'm riding high, and I might be saying Super Bowl's back on.
With the Dolphins and Cowboys after that. Those are two winnable games after that.
Yeah, so, I mean, who knows what happens at that point.
I'll tell you what's going to happen, not the Super Bowl.
Yeah, well, yeah. The Mr. 3-0 last year, this guy right here. Let's just remember that. And the guy who went 0-3 in his picks last week. So
take it away, Burge.
I think I have to start this off because I took the route last week of taking all underdogs. And let's just say I will not be doing that anymore. I mean, my Cincinnati pick last week was probably the worst pick of all time based on how that worked out for my fantasy team because I had the Vikings defense. But yeah, that's where that went. So I'm going to lead us off here. I'm going to pick my first game, and it's a team that everybody knows that I love. Everybody knows that I'm high on, and that is the Detroit Lions. I loved what they did on Monday night against Baltimore, the two-headed monster at running back that the Detroit Lions have, and David Montgomery and Jahmyr Gibbs, it continues to just kind of blow my mind as a fantasy owner of Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery, having to pick who I'm going to play. I may just start playing both of them at this point because they both are fantasy like league winners, especially if Montgomery built on his career night last week. So I think it's going to happen. No, but they're playing the Browns at home. The Browns had a big win last week against Green Bay. I can see the Lions walking in here and kind of handling a team that might be coming in a little high as to where they were. And I personally don't have any faith in the Cleveland Browns at all. So I have Detroit -9. Joe, who's your first pick? I want to go around the list here.
So I'm not picking the Bengals for the first time this year, and I just want to play something for Joe Burrow. Joe, I love you so much. I hope your toe gets better, and I cannot wait to take the Bengals when you come back. I love you, man. But yeah, my first pick this week, I don't know who I'm going to go with as my first pick, but I know it'll probably be a loser based on like how I've been going at this podcast, just giving out loser fucking takes. And I'm actually just filibustering to scroll.
You're in the lead. You're in the lead.
I know. I'm the best, dude. I know. We've talked about this 50 effing times. You guys come to me for fantasy advice. I don't know who that player is, what number he wears, how many targets he gets. All I know is that like I'm going to lay the points on that game and I'm going to fucking win. So I don't know. I really don't understand how fantasy works because I suck at it so bad and I'm still in five leagues and I spend $500 a year on it. But regardless, I'm going to go with a team I've bet a couple times. I'm going to go with the Bucks +3.5, dude. We had a big Baker Mayfield circle session, you could call it, on Baker Mayfield last podcast with me and Manish. I think Manish, you called him was it the most impressive player or the player that's won you over the most, or you gave him some kind of superlative that was really eye-opening to me. And I kind of went back through, dude, the comeback wins and the poise that this player shows is un-effing believable. I don't know how you bet against a player like this at this point in time. I mean, obviously I'm wrong all the time and I'm very demonstrative, but like, dude, if you had to put a gun to my head right now, I'm not 100% sure you can put Baker Mayfield outside your top four or five QBs in the NFL right now.
You did just chirp me for putting him in the top three, outside of the top three before we started recording.
I mean, I mean, Jackson, Allen, Mahomes, Herbert, Burrow.
Well, we're not counting Burrow because he's hurt, right?
So, I mean, can you put anybody else over Baker Mayfield right now?
I think Baker Mayfield's very much like Matthew Stafford. I'll be perfectly honest. I know Stafford's old now, but in real life, both of those guys are comparable players.
I see that. I see that. Consistent.
He's so much more athletic than fucking, I don't know. You guys.
I'm not saying from a stylistic standpoint. I'm just saying from a productivity standpoint, Matthew Stafford, for whatever reason, these last few years, has just kind of gets the short end of the stick when we talk about ranking quarterbacks. And it's probably because he's old. That's what I'm assuming.
That's true.
But if you talk to coaches around the league and defensive players around the league, you know, they view him as a top five-ish type of quarterback. And he should be. And he's going to be a Hall of Famer.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's funny because I agree. And we'll get to this later in my picks. But, Manish, how about you go ahead with your first pick?
I'm going to center on the story of the week, which is the beginning of the Jackson Dart era in New York. 2 weeks removed from Russell Wilson having 450 yards against the Cowboys. He's benched. He looked awful, frankly, the other night against the Chiefs. So I think it's warranted. They're 0-3, not going anywhere. Clearly, Russell Wilson's not the future. I think it makes a lot of sense to go to Jackson Dart. Unfortunately for the Giants, when you look at their schedule over the next month or so, it's pretty daunting. They've got the Chargers this week, and that's the game I'm going to pick. I'll get to that in a minute. And then they've got a relatively easy game, on paper at least, against the Saints. But then in the next 3 weeks after that, they've got the Eagles twice. So it's going to be tough sledding for the young guy. First game, first start in the NFL. I mean, he's played, you know, sparingly a couple plays here and there the first few weeks. But playing a Charger team that's playing lights out, 3-0. And we'll get into this later. All three wins against division opponents in what I believe is the toughest division in the NFL. Chargers are giving 6.5. I love that number. Who knows what Jackson Dart will be, but I can tell you that there's no way he's going to beat the Chargers. I don't think there's any way the Giants cover in this game, even though the Chargers are coming, you know, from the West Coast to the East Coast. Probably doesn't matter that much anymore. But despite that, heavy road favorites, I love the Chargers in this game.
I love that pick as well. My second pick, I'm taking the Ravens -2.5 against the Chiefs. The Chiefs are a team right now. Even though they got the win,
I love this pick, Barish. I just want to put that out there on the airwaves.
I love this
pick.
I don't see Baltimore going starting off 1-3. The way the Chiefs have played this year, very possible. And the Ravens are coming off that loss to Detroit. Where they were pretty much handled against the Lions, and I like them to really bounce back here. And I'm no secrets here. I let bias fill my picks up here, which is why I am 2-7. But I am just hoping that I get a chance to actually sit down and watch this game to watch the Chiefs go 1-3. I'm gonna be so happy. So give me Baltimore -2.5 there. This would be my lock pick of the week, just because I love the Ravens to rebound, and 2.5 is an easy number to beat there. So Joe,
talking about a fucking friggin' rebound, dude. I'm trying. I'm white knuckling this swearing stuff so hard, dude. I'm trying so hard. Pats -5.5 at home versus the Panthers. I think the Patriots have an advantage at coach, at quarterback, on defense, at skill position for the first time in I don't know how long. I don't know if you can
Six
look
years?
Up. Yeah, if somebody look up the last time the Patriots were almost a full touchdown favorite at home, like I would love to see when that was. But yeah, like I said, I think the Patriots have the coach quarterback combo advantage. I think they have the defensive advantage. I think for once in 10 years, they have the skill position advantage. I think there is a chance for a thumping in New England this weekend. So I got Pats -5.5. Manish, what you got up next?
I like that pick. Love that pick, actually. I probably should have taken that. Unfortunately, I didn't. Even though I kind of jumped all over those picks first. I was thinking about it. Didn't take it, though. I'll go to Sunday night. Packers, Cowboys, Micah Parsons Bowl, revenge game, whatever you want to call it. I love the fact that they lost last week to the Browns, so they're going to be hungry. I had actually Green Bay as the number one team in my power rankings a week ago, so they made me look pretty dumb. But still, I think one of the top, two or three teams in the NFC, playing a decimated Cowboys team now, a team that lost their best offensive playmaker in CeeDee Lamb for about a month, a team that looked really laughably bad in a blowout loss in Chicago last week. So even though this game is in Dallas, it's prime time. I think it's going to be a show for Micah Parsons. I think it's going to be a revenge game for him. And I think the Packers, really ticked off about losing to Green Bay. I don't think it's going to repeat itself. I know they're giving it's another big number for a road team. 7 points, giving a touchdown on the road is tough, but I just don't think Dallas has any kind of defense. They made Caleb Williams look like Joe Montana last week. I think Jordan Love will have a great game. I think his receivers will do well. I think the offense in general is going to light up Dallas, and I can see this being a blowout, by halftime, to be honest with you.
I like this pitch.
Love it. Love it. My final pick, New Orleans +16.5. They're playing Buffalo. I'm picking against the Bills. The Bills are going to win this game, let's be honest. But I like that number. That number, I like the Saints to cover that. I mean, the Bills' defense has got their share of problems. Now, it's not to say that Spencer Rattler is anything special, obviously.
Burge, you're playing QB for New Orleans this weekend. Like, that's perfect. How you should be betting this game.
Give me the 16.5. I could be a pretty good at quarterback. I could still move every now and then on these old legs. I can still move. But yeah, I'm taking the points there. And if that number was lower, obviously I wouldn't even be touching this. But I see a high number that I like. I get my chance to pick against my most hated team. Let my heart take over. Let's hope for a better performance than last week. That rounds out my picks there. Joe.
All right, so the last pick I have here is holy shit, I already lost it. Is the Rams -3.5? I think the Colts and the Ursay rocket is gonna fall back to Earth this week. I think the Colts traveling across the Earth to go to LA to play the Rams. I think the Rams put up a good stink in Philly last week and kind of choked it away a little bit. I think the Philly took that game away from them more than they choked it away, but 3.5. The total is 50.5. I think there's an easy chance that the Rams cover this on the at home this weekend versus the Colts. Like, dude, all of my picks, which I am above 500 on this podcast, go back and listen. I'm above 500 on this fucking podcast. Go back farther. The coaching quarterback convo means more to me than any other fucking you could put. You shove a stat in my face, shove it down my throat. I don't care, dude. The coach quarterback combo means more than anything in this sport. And I will take McVay, Stafford over whoever the F in the Colts land, whoever the hell, if it's Danny Dimes, friggin' Trent Richardson, and whatever coach they can pull out of the draft. I don't care. Trent Richardson. Whatever. What's his first name?
Anthony. You're thinking of the running back.
Whoever the F. Because, dude, I traded Alshon Jeanty for two first-round picks and Joe Mixon, and the kid's getting buyer's remorse because Alshon Jeanty is basically Trent Richardson. That's why I had that. I'm sorry. But give me McVay and Stafford over a lot of other quarterback-coach combos in this league. Cover 3.5 easy.
Well, first thing, you butchered his name, and it's Alshon Jeanty, not
Alshon Jeanty.
Alshon Jeanty? Oh, dude, you're thinking of Alshon Jeffrey.
Alshon Jeffrey, dude, come on.
And the other question I have for you, Joe, is how small is the planet that you live on? Because traveling from the Midwest to LA is not really traveling across the earth. It's about 2.5 hours.
I'm American, dude. I'm American. This is all I care about, dude. That's across the fucking... Wait, was that three time zones? That's three time... Two time zones?
Central to like West Coast time, Pacific.
Yeah, 2 hours. Hey, if anybody's listening right now and they got the DraftKings app open, you hammer Rams -3.5.
I've never heard traveling from the Midwest to the West Coast is traveling across the earth. That's great. Okay, my last pick. I know, Joe, you swore off the Bengals. I think, Bird, you picked the Bengals last week, whatever it was. I'm taking the Bengals. I'm getting over a touchdown, 7.5, on the road against Denver. Jake Browning looked absolutely horrible last week against Minnesota. He's not going to be facing that Brian Flores aggressive defense. I'll give Jake Browning a game and a half to get his sea legs under him. Because he has played well in the past when he started. And I think they'll keep it close. I don't think they're going to win on the road. But something about Bo Nix to this point this year has been a little bit off. He hasn't really taken off and picked up where he left off, I should say, from the second half of last season. So I think ultimately Denver, you know, they're a better team and will win. But 7.5 is too juicy of a line for me to pass up for the road team.
I totally agree with that. I think Jake Browning will be better this week. Yeah. Can't get worse. Can't get worse.
Definitely can't get worse.
Manish, you'll know me. I'll back a Bengals bet until the day I effing die, dude. That's awesome, dude. All right. So we're gonna bleed into the anchor segment going on here. We're gonna have Manish and I did a power rankings last week, but I think we are gonna do more of a consensus power rankings this week. I'm going to read off the last ranking that Burge ripped off in the group message before we got going into our picks and whatnot. And then I'm just going to read it off. I'm going to throw it to one of you guys, and you guys can start wherever the F you want, okay? So the between the tackles power rankings for after week 3 going into week 4 reads as: number 1, Chargers. Number 2, Eagles. Number 3, Bills. Number 4, Lions. And number 5, Bucks. So, honestly, Manish, I think I'm going to throw this to you off the top. You'd be the biggest champion of the number 1. You'd be the biggest champion of the coach and the quarterback. So I'm just going to toss it to you and tell me what you think.
Well, you know, I think I said last week that the Chargers are going to be a consensus top 5 team throughout the season. The way they won that game against Denver last week was really special, and I don't want to overstate it because it's early in the season, but the pass that Justin Herbert made, the game winner to Keenan Allen, was something that very few players in this league can make. You know, running to his left, throwing across his body, under duress, it's everything that when you talk to Justin Herbert, fans will say, this is why we have him ranked so high in our quarterback list. He can make plays like that when maybe one or two other players, Patrick Mahomes certainly can, Josh Allen certainly can. I'm not sure anybody else, frankly, can. No disrespect to Joe Burrow, you know, Lamar Jackson, you know, Matt Stafford, whoever else you want to throw in there. Just a special play by a special player. And to circle back to what you were saying a few minutes ago, Joe, I completely agree. Coach quarterback tells you a lot about how good a team is. There is no other, relationship that matters in football, or really, I think, in pro sports more than the coach and the quarterback tandem. I'm a big believer in Jim Harbaugh. You guys already know I'm a big believer in Justin Herbert. 3-0, three division wins, first time since the 2006 Bears did it. They went 13-3 that year and ultimately went to the Super Bowl, lost to Peyton Manning, but they made it pretty far. And I think that this could be a special season for the Chargers, winning, as I said earlier in the podcast, three division games in what I believe is the toughest division in football. There's nothing to sneeze at. I think it's a fair ranking to have them first. I know there's a couple other people here that maybe would have had another team at one. But I think, Chargers at one is pretty solid.
Well, Manish, before you get the knife out of my back, before talking about the next team on the list here, dude, I was the biggest proponent for the Eagles at two. Manish is obviously an Eagles fan. Burge is obviously a hater of all teams, not Patriots. So, no, actually, it was a very easy slide the Eagles into two with Burge. But I'm a big you take the throne and you get to defend it guy. I'm a big, just like I was with the Celtics last year, you win the championship and you get to defend it. The Eagles won the championship. They're 3-0. And if you watch the second half, if you watch Jalen Hurts specifically in the second half of that game, I think you should be fucking terrified as an NFC East team or an AFC NFC team. Manish, I know you've come on here and tried to I'm not going to say you're a hater of Jalen Hurts or anything. I'm trying to say that you've maybe tried to tame expectations from the Mid-Atlantic area around Philadelphia as to the ceiling you might have with Jalen Hurts. And what I saw in the second half on Sunday, him throwing the ball, was something I really haven't seen from Jalen Hurts before. That touchdown pass to Devontae Smith on the pylon. There was a couple third down plays and a couple plays over the middle where I was really impressed with him fitting the ball into small spaces and him making good timing throws, which is something, Manish, the reason why I said that is something that you've harped on him recently in the first couple weeks that he hasn't been able to do, which I could not agree more with. But the way the defense played this game, the way they played on special teams and their coaching got them to a point where they could block that punt, couple that with the fact that I think Jalen Hurts might be able to figure it out behind center. I know you guys are going to disagree, but I really don't see. We talked back and forth in the group chat for a little bit, and I had a, for the masses here, I had a really tough time not putting the Eagles at number one on this list. I think you guys did win me over with the fact that the Chargers had some division wins and some really good wins, and the Eagles have kind of limped by in all three of their games. But I still think if you put the Eagles and the Chargers on a neutral field, I would have a tough time picking against the Eagles. Burge, I know you've got a lot in the hopper for the third team here, so I'm going to wrap up the Eagles talk, and I'm just going to let you go, brother.
So number three team is my most hated team, the Buffalo Bills, and there was some pressure to put them at number two and even number one on this list, and my stubbornness kind of kept them away from that ranking. I will just say that. The Buffalo Bills are a team to me that – obviously they're winning games. Obviously they're 3-0. They've beaten one good team in my opinion, and then two really bad teams. So in that sense, have they really played anybody that's going to give them a fit yet? And the first team they did, and it took a fumble from an established veteran guy for them to be able to win that game and come back. Now, granted, the comeback was impressive late in that game, but they were aided by a miscue with the Baltimore Ravens. Their defense to me is, you know, unless it improves, and they have a really good game to do that versus New Orleans at home on Sunday, but their defense to me is very, very suspect. They got run all over in week one. Obviously the Jets are the Jets, and in this game last Thursday, it seems like they couldn't get off the field on third down. And that was a pretty big telling, where they almost let Miami come back and win that game, a team that really had honestly no business being in that game for as long as they did. I remember joking with you guys early on. I was like, do I even want to watch this blowout and watch the Buffalo Bills blow it? And you guys convinced me to do it. And I ended up watching the whole damn thing, you know, once until Tua threw that pick, which was a classic Tua interception. I wouldn't even call that a solid play by the defense, but obviously I think it was Bernard made the interception, but let's be honest, that was a typical Tua telegraph we'll call it, right to them. And it took that for the Buffalo Bills to be able to walk out of there with a win against a team where they, all intents and purposes, should have blown the doors off of the Miami Dolphins. So I think Buffalo, and I probably think they're more flawed than anybody else out there thinks that they are, but if their defense does not really turn it around once they start playing, you know, legitimate offenses that have their, you know, their S together, I'm not going to swear. I already dropped one. That's my cap. But if they play a if they play a team that has their crap together on offense, that defense is going to be a liability. And that's why for me, I was like, they're not a top team in these power rankings. So that's why Buffalo's at number three. You can call me the staunch proponent of that.
No, honestly, now that I'm looking at it, I think the Bills might have a better claim to number two than the Eagles. But anyways, of course. Hey, I think the fifth in this thing is more of my team, more of me driving this spec. So, Manish, I'll let you take the Lions at four.
The Lions, okay. I mean, there's a recency bias there because they just beat the Ravens, but in week one they got the doors blown off by the Packers. But you can kind of dismiss that, as I often do with week one losses, because it's week one and you know, a lot of weird stuff happens. We also have to keep in mind the Lions have a new offensive coordinator and defensive coordinator. I thought their defensive coordinator, Kelvin Shepard, did a really nice job against the Ravens. I think their defense is very capable of being what they were pre-injuries last season, which is an exceptional defense, you know, top 10 defense, somewhere in that neighborhood. And Johnny Morton, their offensive coordinator, who I know well, he was an offensive coordinator for a season when I was covering the New York Jets. He's getting his sea legs under him as well. They really looked like an unstoppable force, frankly. And I know, Burge, you talked about the Lions offense and the running game specifically earlier. That two-headed monster, was so successful last year. There were questions about how they would integrate the two guys this year with a new play caller, and whether it would be a more Jahmyr Gibbs-centric run game or it would be more 50-50 with David Montgomery being involved. And I think clearly what you saw the other night is that David Montgomery should be more involved. This can't be just the Jahmyr Gibbs offense. I know fantasy football owners would love that to happen because he is such an explosive player. But in real life, the offense runs better when both guys are getting their fair share of touches. And David Montgomery grinded out some really meaningful yards in that game. Jared Goff, frankly, didn't have to do much through the air. He has proven that he can do a lot through the air if need be. You saw that 2 weeks ago against the Bears when the Lions dropped over 50. So it's such a well-balanced offense. And if this defense does play like it did the other night, they're going to be a viable Super Bowl contender. I don't think they're going anywhere. What I think is interesting when we look at this top five is that there's actually two teams that could lay claim to being in the top five that didn't make it, one of them being in the Lions division. So, I don't want to spoil who number five is, so I'll let Joe talk about the fifth team who he is extremely high on. I like them. I don't necessarily believe they should be a top five team, but I'll let you take it away, Joe.
So we've come to the point of the podcast where Joe just goes off on a tangent. I challenge you to find a quarterback you want for one game, one drive more than Baker Mayfield. I'm being dead ass honest. Besides Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes, like, I'm sorry, Manish. Who do you want for one drive?
One drive.
You get the ball at the 25-yard line. You have one timeout.
Right.
Let's call it just under a minute. Just a minute 50, like just on 2 minute warning.
Okay.
You're telling me you want you want Justin Herbert over Baker Mayfield in that situation?
Herbert?
I don't give an S, Mom. Shout out, Bonnie.
So you said Josh Allen, Lamar, and Patrick Mahomes, excluding those guys.
I think we have to.
Okay.
Put them in a different spot.
Joe Burrow, obviously, you know, as long as he's healthy.
Joe Burrow's the best quarterback in football when he's healthy. It's my opinion. But he's
okay. All right. Well, that's fine. I'm not going to squabble with that. I mean, to me, it's Burrow, Allen, or Mahomes. But I would say, and this is no disrespect to Baker Mayfield, because I love Baker Mayfield. I think he's an exceptional player. Probably a little bit more prone to interceptions than you would like if you're talking about one drive. But I would take Joe Burrow. You're not going to want to hear this, Joe. I don't know. I think I would, because of the experience, I would take, for one drive, I would take Matthew Stafford over him. And again, that's not to say that I don't want Baker Mayfield in that situation. I do. But if we're splitting hairs, I think I would take those two additional guys in addition to the three that you already mentioned.
It's funny that you bring up Matt Stafford, because that was the one fucking – the one freaking Achilles heel in my arc that you could literally pull a bullet through. But I think my point with the Bucs is more, it is Baker centric, and I think that, like, I legitimately think he's found a corner to turn. I legitimately think he's a top five quarterback in football. I really think that the change that he's made, being the quarterback of that team and really taking that team as his own, I think has made a huge difference for the culture down in Tampa Bay. They have Mike Evans, they have Chris Godwin coming off of PUP, they have Emeka Egbuka. Did I fuck that up again?
Yeah.
Egbuka?
No, Egbuka plays in Seattle.
Who's the fucking guy in?
In Tampa?
Egbuka?
Emeka Egbuka.
Regardless, they have three fucking Pro Bowl wide receivers.
You have Egbuka in the Pro Bowl 3 games into his career?
Yes. Are you fucking kidding me? Have you seen the guy play?
I love the guy, but you can't really label him a Pro Bowl receiver 3 games.
Not even a month into the year, and we're doing this.
Here we fucking go. Here we go. Everything Joe says is fucking crazy. Everything Bird,
you might be right.
He says
you might be right.
It's fine. No. The Bucks suck, dude. They're 3-0 and they suck, dude. Just go on the next segment. It's fine. No, but I'm gonna go hard on the Bucks. I'm a big Baker Mayfield guy. I'm a big elite weapon guy. I think they have more than enough pieces on the defense. I think they play in a division that's gonna get into the playoffs no matter what their record is. So I think when you couple all that together, I think I said this on the first week of the podcast. I will not be surprised if you see Baker Mayfield in the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in the NFC Championship game. I really don't think that's a crazy thing to say.
Mike Evans' injury doesn't scare you?
Dude, they have fucking this guy I can't pronounce and Chris Godwin coming off PUP. Dude, I just think that they just drafted like the Steelers, dude. They draft so well at the skill position, at the skill positions, that I think that whatever they put in front of Baker Mayfield will work.
I like the idea that they can, you know, get to the conference championship or even the Super Bowl. I do like that. I think they're a legitimate team. They're getting Tristan Wirfs in all likelihood back this week. I am cautiously optimistic about Chris Godwin coming off PUP. Is he going to be eased into it? I don't think he's going to get his normal snap share. It was such a gruesome injury. I think he had two different injuries. So what kind of Chris Godwin are we going to see? And look, I don't want to shortchange Egbuka. I actually think he will be a Pro Bowl player. I just don't think, you know, you can say that definitively, you know, a few games into his career. But look, I love the Bucs. Big test against the Eagles. They typically have their way with the Eagles in Tampa. So, look. You know, if they win that game, they may rise in the rankings next week, but it'll be a fun game. Of all the games, I know that none of us picked that game, but that's probably the game, in my biased opinion, that I'm looking most forward to this week.
All right. So I'm sitting here hoping for the Eagles to win, just so Joe can come in here and eat his words.
I fucking eat my words every time we record this pot. What are you talking about?
That's true.
All right. So one more NFL point before we get out. Dude, I'm dealing with the – I'm dealing with the hiccups right now. I drank one Miller Lite before we came on here. Dude, it's I'm having a tough time. But what the I think the two teams that we had at fifth right here were Tampa Bay and the Packers. Packers at 2-1, the Tampa Bay at 3-0. What can you guys going forward in this week, what will you guys see from the Packers that will, even if the Tampa Bay wins, will supplant them as the number five team in our power rankings?
I want to see a dominant win. Yeah, I don't know how you feel, Birch. I'll keep it simple. I want to see them control that game against Dallas on the road in prime time.
I was just going to say the same thing. If they come out and they absolutely dominate on the road in Dallas and it's a blowout like Manish thinks is going to happen, then, yeah, I'm buying everything to do with the Packers, and I'm going to be sliding to have a little bit more of a stance on this number five team, especially if the Bucs end up losing in against Philadelphia on Sunday. So for me, that's really where what it comes down to. I mean, we all were talking about the Green Bay Packers, even though I know I missed last week, but we were talking about them.
Dude, I honestly think, if you put a gun to my head, I'd probably pick Green Bay over majority of the teams that we put in the top five here.
Yeah, I think that's very much entirely possible. I can tell you one I'd pick that over with 100 times out of 100, but we don't need to go further back into that.
Oh, is it the Buffalo Bills, Birch?
It's the Buffalo Bills. It's I know, I wear everything right out there. There's no secrets with me.
That's why we love you, bro. All right, but you have any other picks or any other things that you guys want to say before we get off this recording here?
Yeah, I have one thing to piggyback on the Packers potentially dominating. My fantasy football sleeper pick of the week, sleeper start of the week, is Matthew Golden. First round pick, took a couple games to kind of get his footing, played relatively well. Last week against a really good Cleveland team, I think he had 4 catches, 50 yards. You know, stats don't jump off the page. But the Cowboy defense, secondary specifically, is brutal, like in a bad way. So I would anticipate Matthew Golden going off and really making me happy. So put him in your starting lineup. That's my unexpert opinion for fantasy football this week.
Bryce, who's your starter this week?
I don't really have a sleeper because my teams are built pretty good from the draft. Since I
What's your record? What's your record on those teams that are really good built through the draft?
We do like all.
No, just like total. Like, you know what I mean? Just like total.
Two and one.
Like,
2-1. I laid it. I actually got it, guys, best week. Not this past week, but the week before. So I got his best week, and my team kind of laid an egg. Ladd McConkey's killing me, Manish, your boy.
I said last year drafted.
I know. Well, it's the dynasty, and I kept him, and I chose to trade Quentin Johnston over Ladd McConkey, and that's killing me right now.
Well, I also have one final thing to say. I did count how many times Joe used profanity during this podcast.
Yes. How many did we get?
Anybody want to take a guess?
All right, I'm going to say
over. Well, I can't say the over. I can't say that.
11.
I'll give 11. Yes.
I'll go 11.
You say 11.
I'm going to go like 36.
Okay, and I'm telling you, this is 100% accurate. 47.
40 effing 7.
47 times.
All right, everybody who's listening, including my mother, I am committed to getting better.
Work in progress.
We went from 100 to 47. Okay.
So 47 in a 73-minute podcast.
One every 30 seconds. All right.
So if you're looking for a tight end, anyways, if you're looking for a tight end to start, go for who's this fucking
48?
Aronde Gadsden.
All right. The third.
Junior. Or the third, yeah.
Yeah,
the
third. One of them. Fourth, second, third, I don't care. He's gonna be Justin Herbert's security blanket at tight end. They had Will Dissly. They had Will Dissly go out. He has 7 targets on 12 snaps, okay? Aronde Gadsden. I know I can't pronounce his name. I know I have the fucking hiccups. I don't care. 49. Oronde Grabson. Go get him.
Grabson.
Oh, Oronde Grabson. Go grab him. Is that what you said?
Yeah, grab Gadsden.
Yeah. You know his dad was a wide receiver in the NFL. You're too young to remember.
I remember him. Bad at pronouncing anything. Dolphins. Dude,
yeah.
Product at work, everybody's like, what are you talking? I'm like, oh, they're fucking. And they're like, we have no idea what you're effing talking about. Anyway.
That was it. Even 50. That was 50. The last one got us to 50.
F. All right. Over under 49.5 for the next podcast. Anyway, this has been.
Smash the over.
You effing MF-er. You effing MF. Between the Tackles podcast, I'm Joe. That's Manish. We got Berger alongside finally for this week. We gave you picks, we gave you insight. You hit like, you hit subscribe. We'll talk to you next week. Goodbye.
Peace.